anymore about moves by government to strip the Electricity Company of Ghana of its revenue billing and collection responsibility. We're also learning from the Public Utilities Workers Union about government's policy to deprive it of some of its bulk customers. There's a lot at play tonight within the energy sector as this ongoing feud between the ECG and PURC festers. And today we've seen two different statements now written by the ECG directed at the PURC, and we're going to get into that right now. And also we'll be hearing from the former commissioner of the PURC, who has also been looking into this back and forth that has been ensuing over the last few weeks. A former deputy minister is now calling for calm. Joining me right now for more on this is the head of our energy desk, Kojo Brace, who moderated yesterday's dialogue on the power crisis that has bedeviled us for the last few weeks. And let's start with that ECG letter to the PURC. It's a strongly worded one.
Yes.
And they will not hide the fact that they are unhappy about what they call the lack of consideration of their own view in the matter. Mm. And this is a breach of the law of natural justice.
Exactly. So ECG says that PURC should have given them enough time, listen to their side of the story before they come to a conclusion on saying that they are charging the board of directors of ECG to say pay X amount for ECG's inability to provide certain kind of information that we needed. ECG says it submitted the orders contained in the decision of the PRC being in the form of sanctions against ECG and its board of directors. The commission ought to have given ECG a fair hearing on the alleged breaches of the Public Utilities Regulatory Commission Act 1997 and the Consumer Services Regulations 2020. Now, the sanctions which were issued after request of specific report from ECG by PRC cannot, under any circumstance, be construed as having given ECG a fair hearing. Mm-hmm. So here they are saying that these reports were not submitted to PRC in response to allegations or charges against it, but pursuant to PRC's demand of same, which demand or request is not unusual. It is the belief of ECG that when the commission had issues with these reports in the light of ECG's duties and obligations under the PRC Act and regulations, it was imperative that due administrative procedure be by laying the appropriate charges against ECG for it to appear before it and to show cause why sanctions should not be imposed against it. So you've taken a certain decision to impose a sanction, but you should have allowed us to come and explain to you why we think you should not take such a decision. It goes ahead to say the first regulatory order dated 18th March 2024 directed at ECG simply requested it to provide the report on various issues that the commission had identified as potential breaches by ECG. The orders did not require ECG to respond to any allegations, but rather a demand for submission of specific report ostensibly for PRC to conduct its investigations. These orders were in fact complied with within the time frame given by PRC to ECG. It is thus expected that following the review of the said report, ECG would have been informed of whether the responses contained in its report were satisfactory or not. However, contrary to the rules of natural justice, the commission failed or refused to communicate its feedback on the report to ECG, but went ahead to impose the stiffest of sanctions as if ECG had completely failed to respond to its initial.
And this is playing out in the public domain. And remember that the PRC also accused the ECG of violating the terms of the cash waterfall mechanism.
Exactly.
Today we're hearing officially from the ECG now in this letter back to the PRC, and they are very clear that this determination by the PRC seeks to enforce the cash waterfall mechanism. They make some very categorical statements that I know many will find interesting and controversial. They say that we understand that the cash waterfall mechanism to be a mechanism set up by which ECG shareholder, the Ministry of Finance, together with its supervising ministry, the Ministry of Energy, manage how ECG's suppliers in the electricity value chain are paid. It is strictly a policy directive aimed at ensuring that all the actors in the electricity value chain are paid in accordance with their contracts and or output in the value chain. We take the view that the cash waterfall mechanism is not subject to any regulatory oversight. In other words, PURC has no mandate. It's way beyond its jurisdiction.
But they give a caveat.
They say in this caveat that they put there when they make this very strong point regarding the regulatory oversight, that PRC at best can only consider this mechanism in arriving at the tariff ECG is allowed to charge consumers as a result of the foregoing, save for any assignment by the two ministries of rights to PRC to implement the cash waterfall mechanism policy directive. PRC has no legal or regulatory mandate to do so.
But here they go on to say that even so, the cash waterfall mechanism is neither a product of Act 538 or LI 2413, and therefore no sanctions can be exacted by PRC under this policy directive, as same would be contrary to Article 195 of the 1992 Constitution of Ghana. The right of PRC to impose regulatory charges arises only under LI 2413, and thus PRC cannot apply Section 32 of Act 538. So they are still trying to bring out what the law says in terms of PRC not having what it takes to apply sanctions against them in terms of the cash water.
And you remember, when it comes to the issues surrounding this, they did not only indict the ECG, they also imposed a financial penalty of 5.8 million. And that related specifically to the subject of publishing the load management timetable. At the time when ECG told us that 630 of its transformers were faulting, for which reason you were sleeping in darkness and I was too, and many of you listening to us were. Now, ECG responds to this. What does it say?
Now, it says that Regulation 45 of LI 241 states that PRC relied upon to impose the regulatory charge ought to be interpreted reasonably as mandated by Article 23 of the 1992 Constitution. But the PRC goes on to say that it is rather arbitrary for PRC to have proceeded to impose sanctions when it has drawn its own conclusions without hearing ECG. They still go back to make that point about natural justice. More worrying is the fact that PRC proceeds so moto to impose sanctions per alleged incident of infraction rather than dealing with the incident as a composite matter. This approach obviously provides PRC the avenue to exact outrageous sums against ECG, which is clearly
strong words there. Exactly. The 5.8 million is outrageous. Yeah. In fact, 2 days ago when I spoke to Dr. Kabna Donko, he was milder. He says it's too high.
Okay.
ECG says it's outrageous.
Outrageous, you know. And it says it clearly at odds with an administrative body's constitutional duty to be reasonable. So as they move on, they try to, you know, attack PRC's mandate. Mm-hmm. The Constitution gives you a certain mandate to operate within. But it looks like you're going. So at any point in time, they try to come back to that point that you are probably acting out of your mandate and you're acting as though you're not listening to anybody. They make the point that this unreasonableness is further manifested when one considers how self-serving it is for PRC to wait and seek to obtain funds for itself under the guise of regulatory charges based on a number of incidents.
In other words, ECG is imposing the fines so they can make money off them. PRC is imposing the fines so they can make money off the ECG.
That's what this statement, and so it looks like the fight is not going to end anytime soon.
No, it's not. It's only getting even murkier.
And then they go ahead to make a certain point. It says, further prove the unreasonableness of PRC is as president ordered directed at the board of directors of ECG to pay said regulatory charge on ECG's behalf. This decision is neither grounded on the fact that the Commission found the Board of Directors culpable nor complicit of any wrongdoing, but simply in its opinion that to sanction ECG would have implications on consumers. Once again, this power exercise by PRC is without any legal basis, since PRC's mandate is restricted to only regulating public utilities and not individuals, individual directors of these public utilities.
You know what? ECG did not only respond in those strong terms, but they also got the lawyers for the board members in question to also write to the PRC. Yes. And they make a similar point.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, that PRC is violating the law.
Yes.
It's in direct breach of the law setting itself up and in direct breach of general laws in first going ahead to impose these sanctions without giving him a fair hearing, but also exceeding his powers.
Yeah. Now, they are even saying that you are attacking, surcharging the directors, it means you are unveiling the directors, which of course you can, that can only be done by a court of competent jurisdiction. So they say that the commission is a creature of statute which can only act within the remit of the law. As a creature of statute, the commission must confine itself strictly within the powers, right, and jurisdiction granted to it by the statute or its enabling instrument. In assuming jurisdictions or exercising power authority thereof, the commission cannot go beyond what is conferred on it by law or try to read into it something which is not there. The commission's power authority to impose regulatory charges on public utility companies is provided for under Regulation 45 of the Public Utilities Regulatory Commission, Regulation 2020. And then they go on to make, blah, blah, they list what the provisions of the law is. They say that, I mean, they try to explain it. And then they come to a point where they say, it is patently clear that under the said provision, the commission can only impose a regulatory charge on a public utility. The commission does not have the power authority to purport to impose any regulatory charge on officers of the public utility. The commission is purporting to impose the said regulatory charge on the board members of ECG clearly exceeded their jurisdiction, as it is not within their powers or authority to do so.
I want to bring in Kojo, Dr. Ni Dako Asante. He's a former commissioner at the PULC with inside knowledge of how the PULC works. And I'm curious to hear his thoughts on what we're just reading today from the PULC and from the ECG and from the board itself, as represented through his lawyers. Thank you very much, Dr. Ni Dako Asante.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
Do you agree that the regulatory orders and the sanctions imposed by the PULC, of which you used to be a commissioner, far exceeded its powers?
To be honest, these are legal issues. They've definitely stretched their mandate. As to whether it breaches law, I would not be in a position to make that determination. But I do need to point out that PULC also has a mandate to regulate disputes between public utilities. So as regards the cash waterfall, it does regard payments for services rendered, which is potentially a dispute between utilities. I don't know exactly the rationale and reasoning that the PRC used for imposing the sanction, but I believe the lawyers will debate the issues of law and determine whether the mandate has been breached or not.
Can the PRLC, and you were there, and the commissioners signed this, in the reasoning for imposing the penalty, the 5.8 million on the board, the directors, and not the ECG itself, is that they thought it will, in essence, punish the consumers. And it's not their fault that ECG has failed to comply with the directive, and so put it on the directors themselves. You've been there before. Is that one that the PULC has the mandate to do? Isn't it only allowed to impose sanctions on the entity, as in ECG, and not the directors?
So again, we are talking issues of law. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not legally qualified to answer that question. But more from a policy perspective, I mean, we are talking about privatization, and this comes to the root of the issue. There are problems with the way that distribution companies run, and we sanction the entity, which is a state-owned public utility. The law, as has been implemented up till now, has not been able to bring ECG into compliance, because all we do is sanction the company. And clearly, in most cases, those running it don't really care what happens to the company, because government will have to step in and pay. So I guess the PRC commissioners have looked at the law and have been advised by their legal advisors that this is a possible stretch of their mandate. I cannot sit here and say they are right or they are wrong, but I think the lawyers, or if it goes to court, it will be determined in court, which is the right forum for this to be determined.
And give me your view on this too, on the cash waterfall mechanism. ECG maintains that it is not subject to any regulatory oversight. You agree?
Yes and no. If we say that the cash waterfall was approved by policy, then it's not a regulatory issue. But I am aware that in the last few months, GRECO and VRA have written complaints about non-payment. If that has been addressed to PRC, it becomes a complaint from one utility against another, which is right within PRC's mandate.
Stay with me, because in yesterday we also had you chipping when we put together this great panel to explore the issues in the energy sector. And one of the things that came up, still exploring how do we fix this doomsday challenge that keeps recurring, was privatize ECG's revenue collection and billing responsibility. In fact, the government is not only considering it, they've already begun a pilot of this. You moderated this conversation.
Exactly. And the point is that ECG itself has already started this. It's been part of this piloting process. But ECG is also calling for the fact that, yes, we know that you want to do that, but can we look at the mode of privatization? So, I mean, Lawyer Andrew Japamesa, who is a Deputy Minister of Energy, a former Deputy Minister of Energy, stated clearly that government has already gone ahead to move from just paper or thinking to actually actualizing what their intent is, but on a pilot basis for now.
These are conversations that we're having in respect of the privatization or some private sector participation in the billing and collection. Discussions are far advanced. Mm. Of course, typically you have the resistance from our friends in ECG. But it's something that I believe will help they themselves. Okay? And so we've tasked them to put in boundary meters as a first step that they are working on. Of course, their digitalization program that they're rolling out to is also helping with the collections. Okay? So when they are able to put the boundary meters in all their operational districts and know the volume of power that is going in every district, then you can introduce private sector people to bill and collect for the power that is coming into that enclave. So it's work that is ongoing.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that in the fullness of time, because 30% losses
is high.
Definitely not sustainable.
It's high.
And then we also learned that a committee had indeed been set up already, chaired by a very senior player in the energy sector to look at the proposals involved. But I wonder how people reacted to this. The other panelists in this particular conversation.
Obviously, the panel thought that, well, it is good, but anytime we talk about privatization, the political in our, should I say, I mean, government would always look at foreign partners coming in. They are rather asking government to say, can you look within? They are okay if it's going to be someone, solution provided by people from Ghana. But if it's going to be outside, they think that it will create problems for us.
Challenge you
yeah.
to show me one instance where this type of privatization has worked in this country. So we can give them some minority stake in that bit, but not to get them into the entire ECG to the extent that they sit on the board of that.
I don't agree because I say we are capable. Look, you know, it's a monopolistic area.
We have to make sure that we don't, in our haste to try and privatize, have a situation where these losses are just continued. So it's not that simple. But at the end of the day, we have to make sure that both ECG and NETCO reduce both collection losses and distribution losses, which is including thefts.
So those are some interesting views there from this dialogue, the Joy News National Dialogue on the guaranteeing reliable power supply. I still have Dr. Ni Dako Asante, former commissioner for the PRLC, on the line with me. And you were on the show today. We're beginning to unpack this a bit more. This privatization of the billing and collection responsibility of ECG is being piloted. You support it?
Privatization is a very complex and controversial issue. I am personally at this stage not strongly in favor, but I don't object to it either, provided it is done well. And there are many issues that can make privatization fail, and there are some issues which can also make it succeed. In a similar way, I wouldn't say that it's impossible for the public sector to properly run and manage a distribution utility, and that privatization is a necessary solution. But, you know, governments will have policies and will implement it, and the role of the public servants and the regulators are to make sure that whichever way it goes, it is done properly.
And thankfully, also joining me is Michael Nyantichi, the General Secretary of the Public Utilities Workers Union. I know they've issued a statement about the arrest of the ECG Ashanti East manager on the orders of the Ashanti Regional Minister. We're hearing from the Ashanti Regional Minister today, and he's defending his actions in ordering the police to effect the arrest for him to go and write his statement. I'll get his thoughts on that pretty shortly. But Mr. Nyantichi, since you're on, I want to clarify from you on this revelation yesterday about the privatization of ECG's collection and billing responsibility. When the question was put to you whether you support it or not, I got a sense that you, in principle, are not opposed if indeed the right conditions will be created for the entity.
Yeah, good evening, and good evening to your cherished listeners. I think the point we have always raised is that we should not be so much fixated on the issue of private sector participation being the solution to all the problems. We believe that there are problems. You can't run away from the fact that a lot of public entities are going through so many challenges, which to the bottom line is more financial. But we have always stated the position that there is excessive political interference which is affecting the running of these state agencies. And any time we are talking about bringing in private sector participation, we are always looking at creating some new environment or grounds for them to operate. And we feel that if you want this kind of grounds or this environment to be created for private entities, create the same grounds and environment for the public sector institutions to operate. But you will not create a fair grounds for a private operator. Then when it succeeds, then you say, privatization is the answer. We have also mentioned that, look, the mere fact that you bring in a private sector participation or you privatize the company will not lead to the solution of the problems. And I've mentioned, if you think privatization is the answer, you should not go far. Let's just go to Nigeria, where about 5-6 years ago, they went through, saw up and privatized almost all their state distribution companies. And what is the state of the energy situation in Nigeria? It's worse than even before the private sector took over. So we should look at modalities that can help the state agencies to operate and be efficient. Nobody thinks that any entity should run and be making losses and it will be satisfactory to anybody. We think that where there are bottlenecks, let's look at what are the bottlenecks, how can we remove those bottlenecks and get the entities to operate.
And I want to switch quickly to the issue that you raised earlier this week in the press statement, and this was very important to you, but not only to yourselves at the national level, but to your members in the Ashanti region. And it had to do with the arrest of your Ashanti East manager. We're hearing from the Ashanti Regional Minister, who you accuse of ordering the arrest. Yes, he says he did so, but he has a defense. Please listen to him.
Me na me can't say please for prayer. No one throw any statement. No one friend won't throw any statement. On throw any way or on one of man in this room. So no, we are not taking him to court. That's why I say I'm not taking statement for future record. Because the moment I'm agree we're here, then you agree that Muhammad just himself won't throw come money to final. None of that is death, you know. So I'm just too much. Yeah, how do you confess it? No man throw now or my red son. And I was happy to me like, don't be the baby or how won't you are. Why don't you come to me? Minimum at last. Then someone I can't, no man, you know. And get them on confirm, something. Because you're not your customer. It's the BBS in the end. And I know this election year, they will politicize. You know, I'm going to preach for the man in Trump statement.
He was speaking to Nkri, saying essentially that indeed it was himself who asked the police to get the regional manager to come and write a statement. He is aware that this is a political seizing and it can be politicized, and so he wanted him to come to the police station to write a statement. Indeed, that happened, and from what we understand, the police told him that he's being charged with something along the lines of causing public upheaval. And he, the minister there, also talks about the fact that he had had conversations with him, and so if there are issues, he should have come back to him. Mr. Nyantuchi, what's your reaction to what you just said?
Yeah, I think it's very unfortunate. And I'm very so much disappointed in the position the minister is espousing in connection with this particular issue. When this disconnection exercise happened and you called the regional general manager, he explained to you that this exercise was not conducted by the Ashanti regional team. So if there was anybody you think has violated any agreement and anybody needed to be accosted, it's not the person who did not initiate or did not sanction that activity. Rather, go for after the National Revenue Mobilization Team that came to Ashanti region to carry out that exercise. But then because you want to show that, yes, you have power, and strangely, sometimes our police also, because any politician gives any order, you will not take time to analyze whether this order is really something that the police should act on. And you frame a charge that he's causing public unrest. In what manner? And so because of that, you have authority, you speak, the police act on, and so you think you are justified. We think it's most unfortunate.
Do you back the roadmap that we've heard from your members in the region, that if the minister does not apologize and withdraw the complaint at the police station, they'll begin with flying red flags, wearing red armbands, but that was just that would just be the first step towards a full industrial action?
Oh, there's no way we will stand against any action that our members want to take, because this is an affront to any staff of the organization. And it doesn't give that kind of security the individuals need to work with. So nobody in this democratic era should just sit down and allow authorities to trample over their rights. So if they embark on any action, definitely we will stand with them.
Thank you very much, Michael Nyantuchi. And he is the General Secretary of the Public Utilities Workers Union. Ghana Connect is coming up next, and you don't want to go anywhere, because we are having a conversation about Dumsor. We are connecting Ghanaians home and abroad, Ghanaians who are in countries where they never know blackouts. But Ghanaians who are in foreign lands where blackouts are pretty rampant too, how is it managed there compared to what they're used to in Ghana? You really want to stay for this conversation. It's pretty riveting. I'm looking forward to this. It's on Ghana Connect after this.